I'm Steve Kraske, and this is KCUR's Up to Date. If you listen to KCUR regularly, you know that Jackson County government is struggling with leadership questions, a jail in dire need of reform, and a law enforcement agency now without a permanent sheriff. Things have gotten so bad, one legislator has proposed changing the rules by which the county conducts itself. Today, we'll consider what a change to the charter could mean and whether it would fix anything. Then we meet the inventor of a print and fold paper microscope and ask him why he thinks it's so important to push down the cost of doing scientific research. We'll get you up to date after this hour's news. With all the controversy swirling around Jackson County government these days, it's hardly a surprise that a proposal has emerged to remake it in a substantial way. A proposal from County Legislator Greg Grounds would remake the legislature, shift responsibilities, institute term limits, and demand that county leaders pay their taxes. Grounds wants county residents to weigh in the August election, although some legislators think it's all too much too fast. Now a conversation with three members of the legislature about what all this means. Greg Grounds is the fifth district legislator who has proposed all these changes. Greg, nice to have you. Good morning.
Thanks for having me here today, Steve.
Tony Miller is the third district at-large legislator. Tony, welcome to you.
Good morning.
Crystal Williams is the second district at-large legislator. Crystal, welcome back.
Good morning.
Greg, for a lot of people, the answer to this question will be obvious given the corruption charge that former executive Mike Sanders has pled guilty to, the controversy that drove former Sheriff Mike Sharp out of office, and the personal financial issues facing current executive Frank White. But why do you want to do this?
Well, there have been a number of issues that have arisen over the last few months, but there have also been some that are not as related to those scandals as are largely circulated in the public. As you may know, we're in litigation now about who controls the combat fund. There's questions about the jail, which is presently administered by the county executive, and many of us think that it should be by a professional law enforcement individual. When these came up, I immediately ran to the charter and saw that while there are a list of items for forfeiture of office by county legislators, like myself and my colleagues here, there are none for the county executive, the prosecutor, the sheriff's office, and I thought, these all need to be addressed.
So you want to do it in one fell swoop here, it sounds like.
We get a free election. I say free in that the county's share of the election expenses is here for the primaries. So we don't have to have a special election like we did a few years ago. It's a chance to let the public decide. I want to emphasize, I'm not making the decision. I'm asking the legislature to let the public make these decisions.
Crystal, is it time for the public to make these decisions as Greg Grounds just called for?
It is the public's responsibility to make these decisions, and I think the time is fast approaching. In all honesty, I think I was probably the first person in the legislature that started talking about how we needed to look at the charter in the face of a lot of the things that were going on last year. But letting the public decide is exactly what we need to be doing. But these are some pretty big changes. What I keep hearing is about term limits, the drumbeat of term limits, which...
That's one proposal there,
and it's the one that always leads, and the Star has endorsed it based on that principle. There's also, there are pay raises for the elected officials in this, which people aren't talking about in an election year. And under the circumstances that we've had over the last couple of years, I don't understand that. I know that my colleague believes that we'll get a higher quality of people if we get a bit of a pay raise, but in all honesty, it's a part-time job, and there's a pretty substantial pay raise, and there's pay raises in it for some people. It's a pay cut for the executive. I'm just not sure about that.
Well, we're sitting here on the first day of May, Crystal Williams. We got May, June, and July, three full months, and then a week before the election. Is that enough time to get this vetted before the public?
I I doubt that very seriously because I've been part of this kind of this. In 2010, we did this and we had public meetings. But I think that what I'm hearing from my constituents is concerned that they didn't have any input on putting this together, that there should have at least been more than some other public hearings ahead of this so that we could have heard from our constituents. And by the way, Greg has worked very hard on this. I'm not drubbing his work. It also is true that most of us have not had much of a hand in this. This has been done amongst Greg and some other people he's talked to. And for me to be a part of that conversation, I had to literally place those calls myself.
Tony Miller, have you had enough time to check this out, or does the public need more time here?
I've had plenty of time to know that this is not what I want to do right now. I think that, so at my house, I sit down with the kids and I tell them it's either a grilled cheese or it's chicken fingers. I tell them what the menu is, and then that's it. That's the way I feel about what this proposal is. I don't see, other than maybe some turnover on the legislature and those folks not being around, I don't see what the rush is. I think we should be deliberative. I think we should do a full charter review commission process where we get input from all stakeholders, where we hear from all people across the community. I mean, we're the only government for a lot of people in far eastern Jack. And so a wholesale change that gives more power to bureaucrats could kick otherwise good people out of office. Policymaking takes time. And so to just arbitrarily decide that we're going to impose term limits on people who want to work on thoughtful projects that take time. I mean, examples, the seniors, the tax to benefit the seniors that we worked on yesterday, that took decades.
Arguably here, that, I mean, the public is sitting here looking at year after year of scandal and crisis.
Those are personal problems.
And a lot of people out there are looking at this, Tony, saying, we've had enough.
Mm-hmm.
People got to go.
And that's what elections are for. And so people can limit terms. They need to just go to the ballot box. And they were strongly against it in 2012.
Term limits.
Correct.
Yeah. Greg Grounds, what do you say to what your colleagues are saying here?
Well, I respect their views, but those are their views, just like my views are in opposition.
Right.
I want the public to make the decision. Ultimate democracy is that the people speak. And the people are bright. Nobody's going to pull anything over on them. I would like to address the pay issue. The pay issue relates to something Crystal said and others have said. Right now, it is a part-time job, but we have, by virtue of having a very low salary, eliminated two-thirds or more of the electorate. If there's a teacher or a laborer who says, I'd like to be part of government, I'd really like to be part of that, but I can't step away from my job and make it, they can't do so. Because not everyone is like most of the members of the legislature, self-employed or retired,
right,
or independent incomes. And so that's part and parcel of the term situation. The term situation, if I could just take one moment on that.
Well, let's slow down for a moment and talk about the pay situation and take these one at a time. What you want to do is sort of match the pay that legislators get with the pay that city council members get in Kansas City, Missouri. Explain what you want to do.
Well, that's really not accurate. There's been a permutation of that. I want it formulated based on judicial positions. Right now, the ordinance that was introduced would have the legislature have a salary equal to one-third of that of a Jackson County Circuit Judge and the other countywide positions equal to that of a judge of the Court of Appeals.
Why one-third? Where are you coming up with this?
Well, I needed something to be formalized as opposed to just arbitrarily picking a number. That will allow that when the state believes that there are raises appropriate for a circuit judge, those will flow through to the county, and nobody will have to vote on their salary in the future. It will just pass through.
And the pay for the county executive would be equal to what the mayor's pay is in Kansas City, Missouri?
Was a change that was made weeks ago in copies that I've circulated widely, both to the press and to my colleagues. I changed it to a judge on the Missouri Court of Appeals. It would be a raise of about $14,000.
Okay. And one criticism has been that you raise this pay for legislators. That's going to flow through to their pensions. And once a legislator would leave office, their pensions would be bumped rather dramatically here.
It's absolutely true that it would flow through. They would affect some. It would affect me. I don't run from that. That's a creature of ordinance, and anybody who has concerns about that can raise it. But I think it is a red herring. It's to take the focus off the issues that this addresses. Ethics, ethics for the first time listed for the three major elective countywide offices. It affects term limits. The incumbency is so powerful that when I ran last time, I ran unopposed. Not because 116,000 people were thrilled with what Greg Grounds was doing. It was because they didn't think they could beat me. And we have several people now who are running unopposed. Those are fine people. Those are great people. But I think that without term limits, the incumbency is so strong that we really don't have a level playing field.
Let's talk about the pay increase proposal, Crystal. What do you make of it? And raising the pay for legislators like yourself who are part-time, does that make sense?
I don't think it makes sense, particularly when you look at the state of the legislature over, I don't know, some people say decades. I'm also going to say that though, you know, you're giving a little bit of a bump to the legislators, there's also things that aren't being addressed. The attorneys that serve on the legislature have a carve out, so they can work within the judicial system while voting on those on things associated with the courts.
Mm-hmm.
But if you work for a nonprofit in Jackson County where you get, I think, over $5,000 of funding from Jackson County, you can't run for the Jackson County legislature. That opts out thousands of people, a lot of them women, who could run for the legislature but can't. We lost a very good candidate that wanted to run this year to that rule. Mm-hmm. There's nothing in here that fixes that.
Tony?
Oh, man, I've lost what the question was.
We're talking about the pay increase proposal.
Oh, the pay increase.
What do you make of it?
You know what? It's a carrot to dangle to try to get the term limits thing.
Okay.
That's it.
Can I say something else?
Why are the two related? How do you see that?
Because a lot of this stuff that we've seen in county government is transactional. People will barter and trade for certain things to get a vote. So I'll give you this, you give me that. I mean, it's politics.
So you give me a pay raise, I will vote for your term limits? Is that what you're...
I haven't had any of those conversations. I haven't been party to them, but I can only imagine that's the logic. I mean...
Okay, Crystal?
What does that tell you? I haven't been in those conversations. I'm not party to them. He's a countywide elected official. I'm a countywide elected official. But because we are not part of the five people that have traditionally been able to do whatever they've wanted on the legislature, we've not had input. Now, Greg did talk with me. I called him, and he did talk to me a couple of times about this. But when I couldn't get this to become a public conversation, I panicked because the original proposals that were in this thing were much, much, even much bigger than this is.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm also going to say that while the pay raises are a carrot, they're also a damned if you do and damned if you don't. Hi, Crystal, you're running for re-election. Vote for term limits and vote for giving yourself a raise.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to the term limits thing, Greg. What do you want to do there?
Well, right now, as proposed, would be 8 years on county legislature and 12 years on the major offices, the countywide offices. But they don't start until next January. People said, why didn't I make them retroactive? But honestly, I couldn't get the votes for people to vote themselves out of office when they've already filed for office.
Mm-hmm.
Just wouldn't make sense. So I thought something is better than nothing. If I might address in terms of the input, I've talked to my colleagues. I've said openly at meetings, any ideas you have, all of what is in here is a creation of my own, except that I talked to the prosecutor. I talked to the county executive. I talked to the sheriff. I talked to Freedom, Inc. I've talked to anyone who has indicated any interest, and I've said, bring to me any suggestions, any ideas. I'll incorporate them. We'll see whether they can get the votes or not. And that's mm-hmm. how it was put together.
Well, why 8 years for county legislators? I mean, the complaint in Jeff City has been that lawmakers are limited to 8 years in both the Senate and the House, and that by the time they reach the seventh or eighth year, they finally figure out how government works, then they immediately have to leave office. Why 8 years? Why not 12 years for legislators?
Some have said to me 12 years. I picked 8 and put out there, and the amendment process may be that someone will say 12, and we'll see whether the legislature supports it or not. But I picked 8 years. I thought two full terms on a local government position There's a learning curve, but it's a pretty quick learning curve. And if you can't accomplish what you want in 8 years, then you have to look back at what you've been doing and the work that you've put in.
We have one legislator who served more than 30 years, a second who served more than 20, I think maybe a third who served close to 20 now. So the numbers are getting up there.
I've not hid my feelings from them. I went to them and said, I'm for term limits, and mm-hmm. I'm looking for some support for term limits. And I've explained my reasoning to them. One of them, I believe, is going to vote to put it on for the people to make the decision. Even though that individual doesn't personally believe in them, they think the people should make the choice.
If you're just joining us this morning, you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. We're talking about some sweeping changes proposed for Jackson County government by County Legislator Greg Grounds. Crystal Williams, what do you make of the term limits idea? Is it time?
You know, after being there so far two terms and dealing with the entrenchment in the culture, I've upset some of my constituents because I will support them at this point. I don't think that they're a panacea. I think that it's very easy for people to jump to term limits when they're frustrated. Mm-hmm. But I think we really need to be looking more at the culture of Jackson County. There are a couple of things that I would have loved to have seen in here. And I'll ask Greg this in a moment. But one of the problems, in my opinion, about the culture and the way that the charter works is that I've been told repeatedly that the legislature does not have originating appropriation power, that it comes from the executive branch and it comes through the budget office. This is something we've talked about, and it is a pretty big change, and it actually ties in with state law.
Is that change included in here
it's
or not?
It's not.
I think it should be, if I understand right, Crystal.
Well, we moved the budget. So the budget officer left, and then he was hired by my colleagues. And so now this charter change would basically, in my opinion, and maybe I'm wrong, move that work to him on our side of the hall.
But I don't see whether or not that does this. And if you have branches of government in both St. Louis County and in Jackson County, it's almost like the strong mayor form of government, the strong executive. I know what I would personally like to ask have forums about and talk to people about is whether or not, instead of weakening a branch of government, whether you don't strengthen the legislature so that the appropriating power and the power over the budget is equal.
I just wonder if the average citizen out there has a feeling about that at all, Crystal. You're getting down in the weeds here pretty good.
That's why you have to have forums and you have to have people come in, and people that are interested need to have that discussion. There's another thing in here that I'd like to ask Greg. It says in here that, it says that anybody that takes a gift of up to $500 can be...
Over $500.
Does that wipe out the $25 gift limit that we just voted on at
I'm
the
confused.
Legislature?
What does this proposal say about gifts, Greg?
Well, under the forfeiture of office, one of the provisions relates to taking gifts or other items of value from anybody who's a contractee or has other business with the county or an employee of the county or takes a loan from an employee of the county. I originally had it at $50, but the county counselor, who I asked to flyspeck this document, came to me and said, we could have people making complaints all the time if they see somebody out to dinner with somebody, and now we're going to have to investigate it and open up a case. How would you feel about making it for what appears to be a more serious violation? And I agreed to the $500 number. Mm-hmm. I supported a ordinance that we had with Crystal for a much lesser amount for county members of the county legislature. But in hearing...
It's all employees.
It was supported, and we passed. Yeah. Maybe I misspoke there. But... the reason that it's 500 was to make sure with regard to loans, other monies, that if there is a serious transgression, that you would be removed from office.
Okay. There's also a proposal in here, Tony, that would suggest that if a county official gets behind on his or her taxes, they've got a year to pay them up, and if they don't, they're out. What do you make of that?
That's fine. My criticism would be not of some of these good ideas, but I think that we ought to look at this in a more comprehensive way mm-hmm. through the charter review process mm-hmm. and deal with all these things and deal with structural things. A lot of this stuff, which you said is down in the weeds, has real consequences.
Sure.
From your third or fifth grade learning of separation of powers.
Mm-hmm.
It really does a lot of what I would see as really limiting the executive branch and bestowing upon ourselves a lot more power. And I think that anytime anybody dominates anybody else, that's not good. I think that we need to have equal and co-equal branches of government doing different things and keeping an eye on each other.
What about this notion of merging county government in Jackson County with the city of Kansas City, Missouri? I mean, obviously that happened in Wyandotte County a couple of decades ago. It seems to have worked out there. Why didn't you propose that, Greg?
Well, I actually looked at some major changes. My first one was to reduce the size of the legislature, but based on comments, and I thought well thought out comments from my two colleagues here, I took that out. I also had people who said to me, Greg, why don't we go for a professional manager form of government? And others who said, what about a merger? All of those would be major, major rewrites with lots of repercussions and ripples. I knew I could not accomplish that in the time frame that I had set forth and to still have the free election, as I call it.
In August. Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. I think that that's something that whoever is here next year, if there is called by the county executive, a charter review commission, that they should look at that in an earnest manner. But I wanted to address the ills that I saw were present now that have caused the litigation we've had with regard to whether we can overrule interim officers. I addressed that. Ethics reform and a host of other items. So I put forth what I thought was the possible, clear, and simple that the voters could decide upon.
Do you think the time has come, based on your experience, to merge county and city government here?
I representing the East, I have to tell you, I think the East doesn't trust Kansas City. I think there would be a hue and cry. They'd probably be out in my front yard with torches and pitchforks.
They wouldn't go for it.
Absolutely not. There is not the trust. Maybe over time it could be established. I think it's more likely that they'd come forward and want the old Truman County idea to be brought forth, an idea I also don't support.
What is that?
To split off the East into its separate county. It was put forth a few years ago and ultimately died.
Wow. Crystal, is it time to merge governments here?
I agree. I agree with Greg. I mean, I represent people in the eastern part of the county, and they would absolutely blow a gasket. And honestly, also the old Truman County idea, you've got St. Louis County and St. Louis City trying to figure out how they can go back and work and at least get St. Louis City back into the county. And we've seen, you know, how many there's like 190 municipalities or something in St. Louis County.
Mm-hmm.
We have 18 or 21. So it doesn't make sense as much as we probably think we wish it could, but it doesn't make sense. And once again, I want to say, I appreciate the care and the caring for our constituents that Greg has exhibited and the work that he's done.
Mm-hmm.
I think that our biggest concerns have just been that it's not enough time and there's not been enough input. I also don't know whether or not there's plans to put more stuff on the ballot in November. I haven't heard that there is, but I'm not one of five votes, so I don't know.
Tony, what do you make of this idea of merging governments?
I would just, without taking much of your time, I would echo my colleague's statements about that. I just don't think that it makes a lot of sense. County government has a handful of statutory or charter requirements. I mean, we're supposed to run a courthouse. Believe it or not, there's a statute that says that the sheriff is supposed to bring heating oil, a pad of paper, and a pencil, I think, for the presiding judge. But we have some basic things we're supposed to do. Courthouses, jail, collect taxes. And then a lot of the other stuff that we do are policy decisions that we have that are important to us that we work on. But those are our core functions. And the needs are different, I think.
Greg Grounds, what happens next year? What's going to, with all these proposals, where do we go from here?
Well, we see whether the legislature decides to let the people make the decisions. If they make the decisions, then government changes in part, not as drastically as some thinks, but the term limits ultimately would come into effect.
And when will the legislature get a chance to weigh in on these?
Well,
ideas?
I introduced it yesterday. We're having a public hearing next Monday, and we'll see where it goes from there.
Just a couple of final things before you guys leave me here. Friday, the legislature is doing public interviews for the interim sheriff's position. We've heard that former Kansas City, Missouri Police Chief Daryl Forte wants the job. How are legislators approaching this situation, Tony?
I guess I only know how I'm approaching it. I've, you know, folks have called or, you know, run into me somewhere and said something, and I've just told everyone to follow the process, go to the website and present their materials, and we will go through the process and see where that takes us.
Would Chief Forte be a strong candidate?
You know, I hate to comment on any candidate at this point. Since I'm on that, I have a job to do there.
Crystal Williamson, what's the latest on the need for a new county jail? Are we gonna? Is that progressing? Is it on hold? Where do we stand with a new county jail?
I think, boy, I get the tough question with the least amount of time.
For the record, we're smiling at her.
Yeah, yeah.
There
is some progression, but I think that both of my colleagues here agree. We all agree that it's been too slow for us. And it continues to be too slow, and I don't understand why it takes a month between one meeting and another meeting. But we all have conversations with the administration and our colleagues, and we're trying to speed that up. I also want to say, you said something about a particular person applying. I'm also on that commission. I need people to understand that just because one person's applied and there's a presumption that that person is a strong contender doesn't mean other people should not apply, because I've been told by people that they've been told not to apply.
Okay.
Because that person's involved. And that is the exact opposite, I think, of what all of us want to happen.
We're going to leave our conversation there. I want to thank our three Jackson County legislators, Greg Grounds, Tony Miller, Crystal Williams. Thank you all very much. Good luck with your deliberations, and we'll be watching closely.
Thanks for having us here today.
Thank you. Thank you, Steve. Thank you.
Time for a break. When we come back, the man who built a $1 microscope. I'm Steve Kraske, and you're listening to Up to Date on 89.3 KCUR. Welcome back. I'm Steve Kraske. Yesterday in the program, we talked about how leagues keep sports fans engaged during the off-season months when players aren't on the field. You can hear that conversation in all of our previous episodes. Just go to kcur.org/up-to-date. Tomorrow on the show, you'll still be able to argue that Kansas City is the world headquarters for barbecue and jazz, but soon you might not be able to say the same for Sprint. We'll discuss the telecommunication company's impact on the Kansas City region tomorrow on KCUR's Up to Date. Well, it's called frugal science, and it's just what it sounds like, developing cheap ways to solve big problems. Manu Prakash is on the faculty at Stanford, and he's made cheap science part of his portfolio. One example, a $1 microscope that folds like origami, or using a child's toy, a whirligig, to inspire a low-cost laboratory test to diagnose malaria. Dr. Manu Prakash is an assistant professor in the Department of Bioengineering at Stanford. As you might guess, he holds numerous patents, and he's a winner of a MacArthur Genius Grant in 2016. He speaks in town tonight at a closed event at the Stowers Institute. Dr. Prakash, so nice to have you here. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
What came first, the $1 microscope or this need maybe for frugal science to solve some of our big challenges?
I think the need's always been there.
Yeah.
You know, I grew up in India, and it's very, very clear when you look at the breadth of places around the world, the hunger for science has always been there.
Yeah.
And we have this accessibility challenge. We have to meet it. So many of these ideas, we've been thinking about them, you know, me and the broader community. We just have to address this need.
So where did the idea for the $1 microscope come from?
You know, I've made microscopes all my life. The first one was stealing my brother's eyeglasses, too. Then that's when I was a child. And I think the thing that starts to happen is microscopy is at the pinnacle of, you know, a window into this invisible world. So it's extremely important to be able to experience that. I was in the field in Thailand, and much of the work that I was doing at that time was looking at tools for health and delivering health. And in a rainforest-like setting, I saw a rabies test in which you required this fancy microscope. But of course, the person who owned the key to that room was missing. Oh. It's a common problem called man with the keys missing. The idea that we put these expensive tools out in the field because they were not designed for that, they don't actually function for a while. And that was the moment I realized that we needed to make sophisticated, powerful scientific tools, but we need to rethink them in a way that every single kid in the world could actually have access to them. So this microscope, I think of it much more as a pencil for microscopy, very much like you carry a pencil around.
Well, explain to our listeners, how did you design a $1 microscope?
You know, you first have to define what you're going to do. So we actually define that this is the cost of what we're going to build. And the importance of that is, you know, a tool and its cost, as it starts to increase, leaves out billions of people. So that dollar number comes from there are 2 billion kids on this planet, and roughly a billion of them, not just in far-flung places around the world, but right in our neighborhoods, live in conditions and places where they have absolutely no access of experience of science. So that was the point, that it has to be at a price point less than your coffee.
What does it look like?
Oh, I have it right here.
Yeah. You just happen to carry that around with you, don't you?
I have to carry my microscope all the time. Primarily because I'm trying to create a culture where people don't think of science as what is done in labs or in the lab exam. Science is done in your kitchen, in your basement, all the time. So you really need to carry. That's the analogy to pencils. So I do happen to carry them. I don't want to be caught without my microscope.
Well, you just pulled it out of a little green sack there.
Yeah,
and
it's
you're unfolding.
Pouch.
It looks like a map you're unfolding there.
It really is a little map of a sheet of paper that's when it's in an unfolded state. It has these little parts, but then essentially...
Now you're reaching into your backpack to pull something else out here.
When it's folded together, I'll show you the object. This is now the folded object. And what's powerful about this, here is an instrument that cost us $1, $1.50 to make, but it allows me to image cellular and subcellular things anywhere. So we could literally pull out some spit from my own mouth and watch bacteria dance. You know, we all have them. Right anywhere, anytime, which is, to me, is powerful, because once you experience that, you really get the bug of science, and it's extremely important to do that.
So you want to rethink science altogether. You think it's been miscast as this realm for the well-to-do and the well-educated, when in fact it's much more accessible than that, is what you think.
Yeah, no, I'm not saying as miscast. I think it's extremely important, the current infrastructure of science we have, and we need to do more. All I'm trying to think about, that we need to bring more people into the fold of science. What's important, if you look at some of the biggest challenges of our nation, of the world, all of them have to do with scientific progress actually tackling. And that scientific progress cannot happen with just the current infrastructure we have. So when we talk
about... We need more people engaged in it, you're saying.
Deeply engaged. You know, science is not just for, you know, in a newspaper that you read the latest stories. Science is a part of our daily lives. And when you think about how science and health and science education and health connects to each other, we want to live in a world where people understand where many of these ideas come from. And it's not just relegated to the fact that, oh, you can find solutions in science. Science is a way of thinking, and that thinking has a very powerful impact on how people live their lives. I often think of, you know, one of the goals, at least for me, when I'm trying to think about this, is just how to make people more curious about the world around them. And you learn how to ask questions, and then you don't even realize, but you're doing science.
And you think we've lost some of that, maybe with our fascination. We use cell phones all the time, but maybe some of the world's mystery has left us a little bit?
I think when a kid is born, it's all there. We have lost how to empower our youth to really think deeply about the mysteries of this world. And without curiosity into those mysteries, it is not going to be possible for us to train them. I mean, we're creating plenty of problems for them, but we're not training them how to tackle them. And that, to me, is an essential break between how this gap of, you know, problems to solutions, it always keeps rising. Because we've lost this idea at large. I mean, it exists in pockets, but we are really talking about not leaving anybody behind. It does not matter what resources you have at hand. You have a mindset, and if you cultivate that mindset, you have the power to change things around you in a very critical thinking kind of a way. But that comes not just from knowledge, which is everywhere. I can go and Google anything. But having the experience of watching my own cells dance in front of you, you know, gives you a meaning of trying to understand this this world in a much deeper way, which is what every scientist's dream is.
We're talking about frugal science with Dr. Manu Prakash. He's on the faculty at Stanford. He speaks at the Stowers Institute tonight. I bet just from talking to you so far, you've got all kinds of ideas dancing in your head about different ways to make science cheaper, more frugal, more accessible, more open. Am I right?
Yeah, I think this accessibility is a critical aspect of how science will also move forward. You know, if you think about biodiversity and biodiversity loss, I mean, it's incredible many discoveries that are being made in the world today are coming from organisms that are spread across the world. We built these microscopes, but the most important thing that I did, that we did, is we built a community. We started with 10,000, then 80,000. At this point, we're around 500,000 kids around the world in 140 countries who are curious and are looking. And that is a boom to science in itself.
How are you connecting with those kids?
So we have an online platform that many of these kids, and I think what was really fun for me, and in connection with Stowers, we're trying to create a network in Kansas for the kids here. And the leadership at Stowers and many of the faculty, including Professor Sanchez, allowed us to bring some of these tools to local kids here. And the goal is to connect these local kids to the global community. All of them are connected online, and that allows us a way to each one of these kids and adults, I mean, I consider myself a kid as well, to be able to have an intellectual conversation, even though I am not in their classroom all the time, we have a meaningful community. And I think to me, that's one of our biggest push and contribution is the tools will come. We will adapt and build more tools. But how do we create a community of people where curiosity is what is valued and creativity is what's valued? It doesn't matter what score they are. It doesn't matter what neighborhood they live in. It doesn't matter what color of skin they have or where they come from. What matters is, are they creative and they care deeply about exploring the scientific world?
Dr. Prakash, there was also this need you came across to diagnose malaria in some of the world's most remote places. So you began thinking about how to do it, and you turned to a children's toy. Why was that the place you turned? the kid inside you may be working again here.
Yeah, so I think one of the challenges that we have to often think about is to delivering health services to everybody on this planet. But a significant portion of places around the world where infectious diseases like malaria, although drugs exist, if I could diagnose somebody, I can cure them. Still, we lose 500,000 people on this planet every year to a disease like that. Why is that? And that's primarily because around the world, and especially in the context of remote places, you know, there's no electricity. There is no infrastructure. 1 billion people live with no roads, no electricity, and hence no traditional education or health care. And the reason I turned to toys is we wanted to build a type of a tool that would not require the traditional infrastructure, something that you could carry in your pocket, very much like Foldscope, but still deliver powerful capabilities of diagnosing diseases.
You needed a centrifuge, in a sense, something to spin quickly. Because why?
Yeah, so diagnosing a disease is like searching a needle in a haystack. Quite literally, it's a rare cell that you're looking for. But if you think hard about it, centrifugation can pull out a heavy needle from a haystack by spinning. So you need a spinning object to be able to pull out even a single infected blood cell. And I asked myself this question, what is the fastest spinning object that you can make with human power? And, you know, I have fascination for toys from the as I was growing up. And I stumbled upon this toy, which happens to be the oldest toy known in human history. Mm. Its relics have been found 5,000 years ago.
Oh, wow.
All across the world. Many cultures, we have rediscovered this little toy. And for some people who have never played with button on a string, you know, take a button, put two strings in it, and twist the strings and push and pull, and you get spinning.
A whirligig.
A whirligig. It's in our culture, it's called whirligig. In many places you go, they have run run in Latin America. They have many names for this. But it's one of the oldest toys, but nobody had asked the question, how does this thing work? Hmm. And by asking this question, mathematically understanding this toy deeply, we were able to redesign it to now build the world's fastest spinning object with human power. So with this, we can spin a sample roughly of the order of 120,000 times per minute.
Hmm.
And that's fast enough. In 90 seconds, you can separate blood from plasma to be able to do for a test. Or in a few minutes, you can pull out malaria parasites that then you can put under a microscope like a Foldscope to actually identify those pathogens.
And the bottom line is you can treat that person then right away instead
right
of
away.
Waiting for a test to go be flown across the country or whatever you're waiting for.
Yeah, I think many infectious diseases, we have drugs, but we've been distributing these drugs without diagnosing people.
Yeah.
And that's very dangerous because then you get drug resistance developing. And so the specificity of diagnosis is crucial to removing many infectious diseases.
Yeah.
And solutions exist, but you have to give the right drug to the right person. Otherwise, it doesn't work.
You know, I always think of, you know, scientific breakthroughs as costing millions and millions and millions of dollars. And I'm wondering, to what extent do you think have we overlooked all manner of possibilities because we've been so trained to think in that way?
I mean, I think scientific breakthroughs still cost time and money. If you think about the money that both the federal government and many other agencies invested in me as a person to train as a scientist, that is actually quite a lot. I mean, I came to this country on a graduate scholarship that allowed me to do and train, firstly as a physicist and now as a biomedical scientist. So investment is crucial and important. Giving people space to think is important in mm-hmm. a curious way. But then we also have to strive towards solutions that don't cost that much. So what's phenomenal about building a true curiosity-driven scientific infrastructure, which will require resources and which we have been leading over many years in this country, if you stop investing in that, you really miss out on where solutions will really come from. Mm-hmm. And some of those solutions can be out of the box and don't cost that much to implement.
Mm-hmm.
So there is this juxtaposition by investing in these types of places that harbor many, many people like us, you're actually enabling solutions that will be far more cheaper and can be deployed not just here, but around the world.
Dr. Prakash, we got an email here. Where can you get these toys he's developed? Online?
Many of them you can, first of all, build, because much of what we do is we publish and it's openly accessible. You can go for Foldscopes. You can go to our community website called foldscope.com.
And that's Foldscope, F-U-L-L.
Like fold, like folding paper, yeah. And scope, like microscope.
Mm-hmm.
And I think one of the bigger aspects of frugal science is what I want to communicate is every kid, if they are listening, is that they can think and build their own tools. Mm-hmm. You know, don't ask or wait for permission to be creative and curious.
Yeah.
You don't need to get to college before you start doing science and get all the grades before you do science.
If you hadn't come from a country like India, do you mm-hmm. think you'd be in the place where you are today?
I think I would be, because really? Ironically, yeah. what I find is often enough, even in our country, because I spend a lot of time in classrooms across this country itself. Mm-hmm. And when I see a teacher has to pay for their own pencils and pens and supplies, and how we have actually stopped investing in those teachers, I realize they're in the same boat as I was in a rural village in India. I find this ironic in some sense that we have resources, but we're by not investing them in places, we're actually jeopardizing the entire future of science. Hmm. So to me, it's not about developed versus developing countries. That's a missed debate. It's about haves and have-nots. And I don't have to tell anybody that, yes, even right here, we have plenty of have-nots. So it strikes really at the heart of what we are missing sometimes in these debates and conversations, that effectively many of these ideas and thinking about accessibility and diversity is valuable right here, right now.
Just real quickly, I got 30 seconds left. One more of your ideas, using cell phones to record mosquitoes. You want to do that, why?
Mosquitoes kill the most number of humans on this planet combined. All the wars over the years, they've killed most number of people. If you're going to fight that enemy, you need to know where they are. We made a discovery that using a regular cell phone, even a $10 flip phone around the world, you can record wing beats of mosquitoes and identify. So any kid in the world, any adult can actually do and contribute. And you could make real-time maps of mosquitoes and actually catch a problem before it occurs.
That's amazing. Dr. Manu Prakash has been my guest. We'll put a link to his websites on our web page at kcur.org. You're an interesting guy, doing important work. Thanks so much for coming in. I sure appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me.
You bet. You can follow us on Twitter. We're at KCUR Up to Date. Follow me at Steve Kraske. And don't forget to follow KCUR on Facebook. Tomorrow we'll learn about Bronco Charlie, Sawed-Off Jim, and a bunch of other young men who worked the Pony Express. Our show is produced by Danny Alexander, Luke Martin, Kathleen Pointer, and Claire Verbeck. I'm Steve Kraske, and you are up to date.